Welcome to Public Square, Conversations in Democracy, where we explore the heart of democracy. I'm your host, Witte van Rensbeek, on a mission to reboot the public sector and invigorate local democracies worldwide. Join us as we spotlight game changers, share visions and practical innovations. Let's begin today's inspiring conversation.
Welcome back to another episode of the Public Square podcast. Witte, who are you going to be chatting with on today's episode? Tell us a little bit.
Today, we're going to be talking to Aja Hazelhoff from the city of Seattle. And Aja, she's the outreach and engagement coordinator at the city. And more specifically, she's working in the Office of Planning and Community Development. And the reason why I really wanted to speak with her on this podcast is because they have a lot of interesting practices when it comes to equity. That is really an emphasis of the city. And they have applied lots of great tactics in their comprehensive plan. So that is one of the things that we will be talking about for sure.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more because, I mean, comprehensive plans tend to be, you know, 10, 20 years long. And even in an individual scale, 10 years can really bring you a lot of different things in life, right? Like so many things can change. So thinking about it at a city scale in a place like Seattle, I'm really curious how they managed to keep a comprehensive plan that lasts for that long, realistic and rooted in the equity that you mentioned so that it's not devoid from reality. It seems like such a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Same for me. It's like an overarching, very technical topic. So I'm curious how they managed to make it meaningful for people. What we have seen from other projects and how other cities are doing it is like always bringing back to, you know, like neighborhood level, even block level, like what are the implications for me? But I was on a call with her earlier to talk a little bit about a podcast, and I heard a couple of interesting hints at like how they make it joyful and meaningful for people to engage in community-centric events, actually.
Yeah, I imagine that's really hard also doing it like block by block or neighborhood when you have a city like Seattle that I think has a population something like over 700,000 people, right? And I read somewhere that Seattle was the fastest growing big city in the US in the last year. So I think they have a lot of old-time residents as well as newcomers. And so how do you grapple with the fact that their experiences in the city have been vastly different depending on how long they've been there and really take all of those experiences into account in the plan? So I'm really curious to hear from Aja and also to hear a little bit more about how they utilize digital because that was a core component, I think, of their comprehensive planning, right?
Right. And I think you touched on an important topic there. How do you make sure that those communities who are typically left out of the conversation, how do you give them the equity and how do you get to more equitable engagement? How do you provide them with tools so that they do have a voice in the process and how can digital really contribute to that? That's something that we'll be exploring for sure.
All right, let's get into it and hear from Aja.
For today's podcast, we're traveling to the other side of the world, at least for me, and to one of my favorite cities, a city surrounded by the sea, by mountains, and by rainforests. We're traveling to the city of Seattle, and it's an honor to welcome Aja Hazelhoff, who's Outreach and Engagement Officer at the city of Seattle. Welcome, Aja. It's great to have you.
Thank you. So good to be here.
In today's conversation, Aja, we're going to be talking about all things community engagement. We're going to zoom in on equity practices. We're going to talk about community-centric engagement. But before we get into that, I would like to kick off with a slightly more personal question, which goes as following. What is your earliest memory of experiencing community engagement and realizing the power of democracy?
That's a really good question. And I think one that was pretty formative for me was thinking, I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama, and I had an internship when I was still in high school, working with a group called Freshwater Land Trust. And they're a group that was charged with really facilitating a citywide process for visioning what a very large urban park could be. It's one of the top five largest urban parks in the nation. And a lot of that was bringing together stakeholders. So everyone from corporate business interests to the city and especially community members. And this park sort of straddled two communities. It ran along the ridge of a mountain, and it was land that had formerly been owned by a private company called U.S. Steel. And so it had been sort of a fixture of community in a long time, for a long time. And one of the clearest memories I have of that process of kind of visioning and getting people's feedback around what they could, you know, what they could imagine the park to be was really this citywide charrette. And what was happening at this meeting was that a lot of the longtime residents who were members of an African-American community there were voicing their concerns for what might happen in this park. And they were articulating things like wildlife that they didn't want to be there, like bobcats and bears. And there was a lot of misunderstanding. The people that were facilitating were kind of, they weren't from the area. They were from a different city and had been brought in to be landscape architects and weren't really prepared for that engagement. And it was the first time my boss, as an intern, had, you know, she was there and she was interested in making sure that everyone understood what was on the table in terms of options. And she was able to manage a conversation in which the real reasons for the concerns of residents were validated, in the sense that they were actually less concerned with the wildlife than they were with predatory city and private practices that in the past had really negatively impacted their community. And so she was able to like bring to the front those concerns in a way that was understandable to everyone in the room, while at the same time validating their past experience, which I think, and she was able to do it just so seamlessly. It was just by listening really well and understanding the underlying concerns and helping to amplify those concerns. And in that room, suddenly everyone understood like what the feedback actually meant. So that was really powerful in the sense that that was just by listening that she did that. She didn't rephrase or tell them what they meant, but it was actually just by really listening to what they were saying that she was able to best engage with them and to make sure that their concerns were noted in a way that the other partners in the room, the business people, the architects, the planners, really fully understood and were able to incorporate into the plans. So that was really powerful to me.
Interesting. So yeah, community engagement with focus on listening. How would you say has this experience shaped your way of how you approach community engagement or how you approach community engagement and how do you incorporate this actually in your own work?
Thinking of data differently, we got in as a result of that process and many of the processes that we work on in the city of Seattle, we get a huge volume of data. So that's everything from comments to, you know, survey results to data points that we get that are just numbers that we're analyzing. All of those things tell a story. And it's really about trying to find the truth in those stories and also validating those truths and taking the stories themselves as the data that you're collecting, that you're analyzing, and also just stepping back from that process as someone in the city whose story it is not actually, and using your ability to advance the concerns and the lessons and the experience of those stories in a way that's very cohesive and holistic. That's what I saw in that meeting. And it's also one of the ways that I approach just my work and how we do things in our office, and especially with the work that we're currently working on.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to that later on for sure. In that point of like the you know, like the human story behind the data. Let's take a step back. And today we're going to be talking about One Seattle, which is Seattle's comprehensive plan. So for those unfamiliar, for our listeners, could you give us just a short summary of what the One Seattle Comprehensive Plan is about and what it aims to achieve?
Yeah, so the One Seattle Plan is what we're calling our update to our comprehensive plan. And every city in Washington is mandated to have a comprehensive plan. So this is a legal update to our plan. And it's major for a number of reasons. This is our policy umbrella or framework or blueprint. for really how the city invests in communities. And it's a long range plan, which means it looks out over the next 20 years. And so the policies and goals that are in all of the elements, which are kind of like chapters in the plan, each of which focus on a different topic, everything from housing to transportation to growth strategy and anti-displacement strategy, all of these different things and everything in between is covered. It's comprehensive. It's very extensive. So they all dictate how the city should be making investments and working with community to articulate the things that that community has put forth as what they want to see in the next 20 years for the city. So it provides a framework for actually implementing that policy, which is done by all the different departments that correspond to the different elements.
Yeah. So very high stakes plan, right?
Yeah, it is. It is for a lot of reasons, because, you know, as it is comprehensive and the elements in the plan really correspond to the main functions of a city, any city. And in Seattle, it's very important for us to think how we want to achieve the goal. So it's very a goal-oriented plan. If you think in the next 20 years, a lot of things are going to change. And this is an opportunity to articulate what the concerns are now in community and also how we want the city to get to a different place. And so we're really doing a lot of goal setting when we set policy framework. Which is why it's really important that we do engagement so that from the outset, we're guided by the visions of community members.
All right. And what is the role of the community in helping shape this plan? As in, like, what kind of voice do they have in the process?
So community members are really central to articulating both the problems and solutions, I would say. So it's very important that we understand what are the longstanding issues that each different community faces? And of course, there's many different communities, and many different communities have had different experiences. They've benefited and been burdened by city policies in different ways. So it's also really important that we understand the historical context, that the city's policies have helped and hindered communities over the course of having many comprehensive plans since the 90s. So we take that into account, the historical perspective and relationship between community and the city. And then also it's very important that cities are listening to the residents having the vision and guiding that vision, and also articulating how the implementation of that vision occurs. And so it really defines the nature of how city partners with communities to make those policies more than just words. It actually translates into actions and departmental programs and the way in which we actually invest and use city money to basically make these plans happen.
Right.
So it's very important that community is at the heart of that and also guides the process for the implementation.
And concretely, how do you do that in the One Seattle plan? What are the ways that you involve the community?
Yeah, so our approach to engagement was really number one, to center equity in the process itself, which means that we started with an acknowledgement, like I said, that many communities have been historically underrepresented or excluded completely from the city's engagement process. And as a result, haven't benefited and have instead very much assumed and shouldered the burden of policies. There's a trade-off kind of that happens with many policies where you have to balance the benefits and burdens. And so we wanted to make sure that we were hearing from and amplifying the voices of those communities, which historically have not been at the center of our process. So for our A tangible way to say that is that we devoted the majority of our resources that we had in our engagement budget to partnering with community to have them answer the question that you posed, which is, how do we engage with those communities? We made sure that we were partnering with those communities in ways that compensated them. So we had a group of 7 different community-based organizations that we worked with, each of whom submitted their own engagement work plan for how they wanted to engage with their communities. And we resourced them to carry out those plans for engaging with their community. And then they produced reports that contained recommendations actually for the policies that they saw that would be responsive to the needs of their communities. And we are working currently to incorporate those plans. So really the process, that's one way that we engage with those communities and use methodologies actually from community and facilitated that through resourcing those communities. We need to hear from those communities what the policies themselves should be that they feel would be most effective in addressing their needs and concerns. And we modeled many other parts of our engagement off of this premise of really resourcing and capacity building in community, and also making sure that we were going to communities rather than asking them to come to us. So a big part of that was utilizing digital engagement, so virtual engagement that allowed us to reach a vastly larger number of people than we would have been able to just through in-person alone. We were also, we started this engagement during the pandemic, during kind of the height of the pandemic. So we had to contend with those restrictions in terms of in-person outreach and traditional methodologies that we might have employed. But we wanted to not just do an alternative. We wanted to make it even more dynamic in terms of lowering that barrier to access and providing opportunities for people that maybe couldn't come to in-person meetings or didn't have the time to read through all the materials in the plan. Using virtual engagement really allowed us to provide all the information communities needed to understand what it is that's on the table, but also to provide the opportunity to weigh in on those things really anywhere that they want to, right? Whether they're on the bus and using a smartphone, or they're, you know, at home, they don't have to go to a meeting location. They can do something after dinner, after they put their kids to sleep, and it only takes 5 minutes. So really right-sizing the information and the request for, you know, what type of things we were having questions about as we're writing the plan. And then also making sure that we were coming to community at the same time when possible. So making sure that we were partnering with leaders and community-based organizations that had interest in the plan, and that we were responsive to their invitations to be with them in community and to be available for face-to-face interactions as well at the same time as providing those virtual options.
Yeah, wow, there was a lot in there, a lot of interesting things I would like to kind of get into. I heard you say at the start, so you worked with 7 community organizations, right? So right. that is like an important part of the strategy. Could you tell us a little more about why? And I could see why, because you said that I don't want like people to come to us. We got to go to the people, to the community. But could you tell us a bit more about that strategy, why you have developed that strategy, what role they play, and maybe also a couple of like, yeah, what are the key success factors when you work with such organizations, and maybe some of your learnings?
Yeah, for sure. So the partnerships with the community-based organizations, or because I work for a city, we can use an acronym. So CBOs is what we call them. So our CBO partners were all from BIPOC-led and BIPOC-serving communities, which was really important. We had a RFP that we put out, and we were very clear that these were opportunities available to community organizations that targeted the populations that we're seeking to uplift in this plan. And that was really positive in the sense that all of the people that we looked through as part of that RFP process were so dynamic and creative with the ways in which they were proposing to engage their communities. So that was amazing just to see the diversity of methodologies that were being proposed. And also something that was really exciting about each one of the proposals we received was that without exception, all of those groups stipulated in their proposed budgets that they used the budget that they had partially to resource the participants in their community their outreach that they were doing. So the compensation piece, which has been historically a challenge for cities to figure out from the outset of engagement, how to properly compensate folks for their time and expertise that they're giving freely to the city. We think that should be compensated. And so that resonated with all of those community-based organizations without us even saying that. So they built that in And that really facilitated us to pilot new ways to compensate the participants for the time that they provided. So that was very exciting as well. And another thing that was really dynamic about the way that the community-based organizations interacted with their communities was really not using traditional, that we would think of traditional methodologies. So really employing things like different types of art and performance, walks in community, field trips, different ways of utilizing public spaces that were common practice for them just in interacting with the communities they serve. Those became where the engagement was taking place. And so the conversations that those generated and the fact that the city wasn't necessarily there at those events really allowed for a type of honesty and a conversation to take place that I don't think would have been possible had the city been there. So it really was able to get around the fact that many communities don't necessarily trust the city. There's a lot of work to be done and relationships to be built. And so working with the community-based organizations was a way to start to build those relationships. So to me, that was one of the big takeaways, is that our relationships with those communities continue to inform the plan now. It was a year-long contract. And so that has been completed for about, you know, 3/4 of a year ago. And we are still in conversation with those organizations because they're following up with us and we're following up with them. And so there's a feedback loop that is taking place here that we want to cultivate and continue to grow. And that is really a lasting impact of this. We were able to work with them, but it didn't feel extractive in the sense that we're investing in a relationship that is going to continue to inform the plan and is going to really increase our accountability for the things that we are saying that we're going to do. And so that is also a built-in benefit of partnering with the community-based organizations, that those lasting relationships, if cultivated and maintained, really build in accountability to the policies and the goals which their recommendations shaped. So really making sure that it was clear too how we use their recommendations to inform the plan. And that also pushed us to do the same for a lot of the other feedback we received from many, many other communities through our digital outreach and also through other in-person outreach that we were conducting, is really a call for greater transparency, better communication, and more accountability in the engagement process itself. So it really kind of gave us a lot of direction and lasting impact, as well as providing sort of an on-the-spot solution for this particular project, needing to engage with those communities. So a lot of great things are coming out of those partnerships.
Yeah, one, let's say, interesting but slightly probably controversial idea that I heard you sharing and that you do is, so you pay for people's time, right, to participate in the comprehensive plan in the process?
Well, so this is something that was, for us, it was something that, of course, we knew that many communities have been asking for, and not just our department, right? Many, many other departments do engagement, and there is an awareness that the city has that many folks in community have articulated over a long period of time. And I think that one of the things that's been exciting about this is that the comprehensive plan actually contains an element that's focused on community involvement. And it's been through working and testing out and piloting these different types of compensation that we're really paving the groundwork for a citywide compensation policy that we hope to advance with the plan itself. And really just making clear that we have a policy that says when possible, departments should really prioritize from the outset of plans, ways that they're going to engage with different community members, and also within that, different ways to compensate community members for their time and expertise, because that's really instrumental in shaping the plan. And compensation is a way not only to honor the time and the effort and the energy, but also the importance to us as planners and hearing from community about what the problems and solutions are. So it's a validation of the importance of that, as well as just compensating people for their time.
That's right. How do you decide concretely whether, because participation here is open to everyone, living in Seattle, right? So how do you actually concretely decide whether you want to compensate someone for their participation or not? Is it then always linked to like offline event participation, I guess?
I think we are in the process of trying to articulate a range of options, because like you're saying, there's different types of participation. You might have an hour long interview versus a 5-minute survey that you complete while you're on the bus. Those are obviously two different levels that would necessitate different levels of compensation just for the amount of time and effort. So rather than sort of making it an exercise in saying for X type of participation, X compensation, and being very narrow in our policy definition, I think the important thing here is that we're, through our policy and goal language and the comprehensive plan, really focusing on the need for each department to use existing examples of when compensation has been used. And we have lots of different examples to guide and inform the budget for the engagement so that money is there and that you can make calls in the moment or as plans evolve. There's a very iterative nature to engagement process. And for example, we had money in our budget to compensate the community-based organizations because we knew we had a sense from them of their scope. We knew what the work that they were going to be doing, and we very much treated them like consultants, their community consultants, and the work was compensated in a structure that resembled a consultant compensation structure. But in other instances, we haven't had the right amount of compensation dollars, and so we weren't able to offer that. So I think the lesson learned was really to make sure that early on, if you know that you're going to be engaging community, which should be really, if you're having a project that impacts community should be engaged. A big part of your pre-planning as the city or a city department should be to consider what are the options and the need for compensation as you're considering all of the other budget options. So the policy language and the comprehensive plan that we're putting forth really hones in on that part of the process rather than in a more prescriptive that you have to give a certain amount for different types of compensation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is an evolving process and engagement can look a lot of different ways in a lot of different communities. And I think the important thing is to also offer compensation as a literal offering. So I think that when you are burdened, there should be what follows is compensation to reflect the burden. If you don't have a burden, it should really be something that you're aware of that you're doing and you don't need compensation because you're exercising your privilege that allows you to provide that without an undue burden.
Right. And that is what equity and equitable engagement is about, right? So that is a very clear and tangible first tactic, compensation. Another thing I think we should be talking about is engagement with non-English speakers and language accessibility. So could you tell us a little more about some of the tactics you have deployed there to engage folks who don't have English as their first language?
Yeah, so virtual engagement was a really very clear way that we knew that we needed to employ translation and really thinking about the range of different languages that folks speak in Seattle, especially as they... non-English speakers, immigrants, refugees are certainly some of the populations that we wanted to prioritize as part of our engagement. So again, it does come back to budget and really ensuring that you have the proper resources to provide high quality translations of your materials so that the thing that you're doing is clear to a community, it's understandable. And also conversely, so that you have resources to translate those responses. So there's a sort of two parts that you need to consider if you don't possess that capacity within the office. And we're really lucky to have our Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. They provide great translations. Citizen Lab has provided great translations. We have the ability to offer interpretation services, all of those things are budget line items. So mm-hmm. there's something that we need to put, again, at the beginning of our consideration process for a project. That's a more boring answer. The other answer is that we also are lucky to be able to partner with community liaisons, which is a sort of service or program offered by our Department of Neighborhoods. And that allows us to connect with people who speak a wide variety of different languages and who are leaders in their communities. And I think that that's really important as well. So the first mm-hmm. part was more passive, just making sure that you provide a range of materials and information in language. The other thing is making sure that if you're doing in-person engagement or virtual engagement, that you have someone who speaks the language and that's responsive to people's needs in that context. So coming prepared with someone who's able to make it welcoming, to address cultural and also linguistic barriers that you might foresee. So it's very, very much being intentional about who you're engaging with, what their needs might be, and coming prepared, whether that's with a person that speaks their language and is able to interpret and help you get that story at the end of the day, right? Like, I think that we are telling a story and community is telling a story. And if you aren't able to communicate effectively about that, there's going to be frustration on both sides. So I think it again really is about prioritizing those resources, and whether that is having someone on site for meetings or for your materials to be translated. Both things are really important in order to have effective communication. And it's something that really comes down to preparation. So,
yep. And I think what you call the boring point is, I think, a very important one. Equity also costs money, and you got a dedicated budget, because equity is easily used as a loose buzzword. But as long as you don't put dollars on the table, and if you're not serious about, okay, what are the investments that we're going to make this equitable? I think that's a very important point, actually. The other thing you were mentioning is, we started the conversation talking about, the human touch and behind the data, not just looking at the data. So a comprehensive plan, I guess nobody wakes up in Seattle and says, this morning, I want to participate in comprehensive plan. So what do you do to make this, to tell that story they were referring to? How do you make this something digestible and something that is meaningful and maybe even joyful for people to participate in?
Yeah, no, it's a point well taken. It is a, almost 500-page document from cover to cover. It's very dense. In parts, it's very dry. It covers a lot of technical ground. There's a lot of analyses, and there's a lot of words that, despite our best efforts, are just technical and pretty wonky. And so I think that the main thing that I try to remember is that whether or not you have ever engaged with the city before, you likely complain about things as a person living in a major metropolitan area, right? So whether that's the cost of your housing, whether that's the difficulty of your commute, whether that's a park isn't being maintained or you don't have access to open space. These are things that over the course of your day, you may think about and you may talk to other people about. And you certainly possess, as a person living in a city, a historical memory of how things have been and what your experience has been in your community. And a lot of those things, folks may not realize the city has a big part in shaping. And so I think that the important thing to communicate is the city's role. So what the city does, how the city affects the environment that we live in and how things functions within it. So that's a very important touch point to make with people, is that actually this comprehensive plan really talks about things that you may really love about your city and you may really hate about your city. And this is an opportunity to share that information, which we value, and also to articulate what things you might change. Because if there's a need for change, and if we hear that need for change, we can be responsive to that need. If we don't hear that there's a problem in community, there's no real way for us to understand that issue. we can understand it from a numbers perspective, right? We have data that tells us a lot, and we use that data to inform what we are understanding needs to be changed. But what we really need too is that experience. And so the stories and the experience that comes from community is really essential and giving us a more full picture. So it's kind of like two sides of the same coin. And the solutions will be infinitely better if we understand not only the solutions based on our understanding of the problem, which is informed by community, but also listening to solutions that community may have been utilizing and implementing that the city is not aware of. And so this is an opportunity to say, hey, in lieu of the city actually fixing this, this has been community's approach to fixing this. And in many, many cases, these are actually the best solutions because they've already been implemented in community, they've been tested, they've been adjusted. And so community's approach to solving issues and a community-informed approach to engagement really helps us to derive better solutions, more durable solutions, and also solutions that are more reflective of and uplift the solutions that community has already been implementing in some cases for decades. And we just may not be aware of them because they happen in lieu of change affected by the city. So that is the answer to the first part. The second is I always tell folks that one of the most boring things to me, like there's literally shows, Parks and Recreation, for example, that shows how boring the community engagement process can be, right? It can be, you need to come to this obscure location called City Hall and you need to stand in front of a microphone and wait in line to do so. And then please provide your comment. Thank you for your comment. And then that's over. That is a nightmare to me. I would never do that. And I would really not expect a whole lot of people to be enticed by the prospect of spending their Thursday evening doing that. So I think for me, I really approach this as who throws the best parties. And it's not the city, usually. It's usually community members know how to use space and to enjoy each other's company. And those are the places where we get the best engagement. So either resourcing communities to essentially throw parties, to gather people together, to have conversations. And that means food. That means music. That means being in a place that is reflective of the community that you're looking to reach. So resourcing that or building relationships that will get you an invite to that party. I'm always trying to get invited to other people's parties. So I think that's another kind of way that we can come to community. We can be in community with the communities we serve. And the more organic the conversation, the better. And then also just making sure that we're giving community space to do that process on their own. We may just need to resource the party and get the notes later. Because those notes are always very effective and they may not be in note form, right? They may be in art. They may be in a youth project that happens afterwards. They may be in the form of a performance that happens, which is always a real pleasure and a challenge to incorporate because we're not used to it, right? We're used to traditional data. Thank you for your comment. But I think that if we think a little bit more creatively about how stories are told and how the messages are being presented to us, we'd find that there are many more opportunities to understand communities better if we can just be good enough friends and relationship partners to be able to be invited into those spaces and to support those spaces.
Yeah, that's fascinating. The idea of you know, it's about experiences, lived experiences, gathering these, making, you know, community engagement shouldn't be dry and boring, can be something joyful, can be a social event. But if I'm just putting on my like devil's advocate hat here, do you manage to capture those experiences then? Because if you ask me or you invite me to your party, you know, I don't know whether I want to talk about a new zoning plan or a new whatever it might be. So do you still capture or do you still manage to capture then all those experiences and those anecdotes that will then later on inform policy and your decisions from those events?
Yeah, I think, the work of taking notes is something that I've like come to really appreciate as a skill set and as something that we need. I think it's great to have the experience of as a city representative going somewhere and having this, you know, very in Dutch, we would say gezellig, experience of just exchanging ideas and listening to someone's experience. But for me, it's very important, again, switching back to sort of a data collection, it's very important to not lose sight of that. So it doesn't actually really matter what the format is, but yes, the collection process and making sure that there's something, a takeaway, a deliverable, if you want to like bring it back to something the city is comfortable and conversant in, making sure that you're capturing that in a way that is transferable and that you can share. So I think documenting and making sure that you're able to share out that documentation with the right people. So for me as an engagement staff, I make sure that the note takers that document those exchanges, those conversations are also compensated. That's a really critical role, whether that's a city staff doing that or recognizing that that's a very important role of an engagement partner or a consultant that we are working with in community. And then taking that information back and connecting it to the correct policy staff member, or having that policy staff member come along if it's something that is not really going to transfer well to a note form, right? I think planners really typically rely a lot on spreadsheets, sometimes Word documents, but we're most comfortable with data in a very kind of numerical form. And so it takes a little bit of creativity and an openness to consider what is the message. And that thing can't necessarily be quantified and mapped and graphed. It needs to be something that you use your brain and you engage with and you hear. And that's the transformative moment that you're looking for. And I think it's all about making sure that you're faithfully and without manipulating in any way, just transferring the data. I guess a concrete point just to bring it back is that the community-based organizations that we worked with each wrote a report. And all the reports look different. And we did no analysis on those reports. Those reports, I made sure, just got to the policy staff. And then it's a process of reading through them. And you can put them in a spreadsheet and you can like crosswalk them and you can analyze them. But at the end of the day, if you didn't read through the words that they put forth and the videos and all the different pieces of that engagement feedback, you won't understand the true picture. So you'll be missing something. And that's on the planner to do that work, and to make sure that they're understanding. The other part is making sure that we're not going to a party and asking about zoning. It's more asking about housing, asking about, do you have a good access to a variety of different houses? What's your apartment search looking like? What's your lease looking like? What's your relationship with your landlord? Those different relationships are the things that people talk about every day. So bringing it back to everyday talk is a really important point for us too, as city staff.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned a couple of things that link directly back to the accountability that you were talking about earlier, documentation, the note-taking. But let's talk a little more about accountability, because you're right. You have all the great documentation, you have that report, 500 pages or less, and then it ends up a table of the planner or the decision maker. How do you then make sure from there that it's not about giving the community a voice, but also giving them an influence and holding the decision makers accountable to any of the promises they make?
Yeah, this is a really important part, actually, of the how we are presenting both the feedback that we are hearing, and how frequently we're doing that, and as well as like how that final plan, that 500 page document, is it readable? Is it digestible? Is it something that's accessible to community? So the first point is that we need to make sure that we're letting people know what we're hearing throughout the process. So creating a series and a regular cadence of touch points where we share out what we're hearing to ground truth that with community. So that our understanding is correct, and providing opportunities for people to see our notes, for people to see everyone else's comments, to be in conversation with those comments, to challenge them. We actually had a couple of community groups that used our full data sets, which we released on our Engagement Hub platform, to challenge what we were saying. Our understanding, they felt, was incorrect. And that is awesome. it's amazing because their understanding of the data was completely different from ours. And we had a meeting with them and we are in conversation with them continuously from that point because their perspective was completely different and we needed to be open to and willing to have that conversation to better understand their points. So it's a willingness to be open about what that story is and what the data and what the comments say or don't say. The second part is making sure that when you have taken all of that data and you have used it to inform whatever it is that you're doing, so in our case, a draft plan, you're presenting the touch point connections. So it's really making it clear how the dots connect. And we're excited to be using a new tool or software called Conveyo on the platform that really is going to allow us to do that. So for example, where there is a policy that was directly influenced by, or in some cases, word for word, what the recommendation was from a community-based organization, we have an icon there. And we say, not a lot, but just a little to indicate that, and we link to their report. So there's a conversation between the words that we put forth as in the form of policies and goals and what influenced that. And that extends not just to the CBOs, but to community recommendations more broadly. It talks about our work to reflect and be more representative of Seattle's Indigenous communities and our relationships with urban Native and tribes. That's another example of what we wanted to highlight, sort of the root of where we get policies from. And so we wanted to make sure that it's very transparent for people who are accessing the plan, how we arrived at the conclusions we arrived at. So making sure that it's very clear to community where and how their recommendations influenced and informed the policies that we're putting forth are very clear to community. And so using a new online tool called Conveyo, we're doing that and making sure that we are putting connecting the dots between the feedback that we heard and the policies that we're putting out. And we're showing community through different visual cues across the entirety of the plan where there's sort of intersectional themes and where there's different types of touch points that we see, and also different ways that we're making sure that our racial equity goals are being advanced through the policies. So we want to signal where we're attempting to do that. We also want to hear from community how close to the mark is that? Where are we failing to do that? Where do we need to do better? And how? It's all an open conversation and we want community to weigh in so that we can get closer to better alignment with the things that the community said that they want to see articulated in and implemented by this plan eventually.
All right, Ajay, our time is almost up. So I would like to actually ask you one final question because I feel you've shared so many, you know, like very tangible tips and tricks. But if you could turn back time, what would be for you like the one single piece of advice that you wish you had received as a community engagement officer before you embarked on this journey of the comprehensive plan?
I think it would be to start way earlier than you think that you need to. I think that we, at the same time, this has been a really long process. Right now, it's like almost 2 years. It'll be about 3 by the time that the plan is complete. I feel like we could have started 2 or 3 years ago. Mainly that's because we want to hear from as many people as possible, but it's also that the city has already heard from many of these communities before. There's been a lot of engagement data that the city has collected and also that community has put forth repeatedly over decades. And so there's definitely a process of looking at what we've already heard and being a little bit more intentional on how we're starting from a point of understanding with community. And then that's the starting point of your engagement for the plan is saying, this is what we've heard in the past. And then just starting with that conversation, which honors the past engagement that's gone on with the city, acknowledges where there have been pitfalls and challenges. And starting from that point as really like what your motivation is continuing to refine rather than just starting from scratch, because the city and the community have always been in relationship to each other. So starting with a deeper understanding maybe of where those conversations have ended and where you're picking up with the start of a project, because really it's an ongoing thing and it will continue to be after the plan as well.
starting earlier.
Yeah.
That's a great bottom line to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Aja, for sharing all those insights. I thought it was like an incredible conversation. Thanks so much. And I wish you all the very best with the rest of the plan.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. It was great being with you.
All right, Weetzit. So you know that before the episode, I expressed some skepticism about how something that lasts for 10 to 20 years, like a city plan or comprehensive plan, can really be rooted in reality. And I feel like Aja just gave us so many pointers on how to realistically make that happen. So I'm curious what stood out for you the most.
Well, a couple of things, really, because I thought that the advice that she shared was super tangible and super tactical. One of the things I think that for me was really insightful is to think about citizen engagement and community engagement, not as like, hey, you know, here is a formal process and that those are times at which you can have your say, but to start really from a community-centric experience that they would gather people, make it a party. That's how she talked about it. And that it's a lot about actually those anecdotes and the people living in the city experiencing their neighborhoods, starting from those anecdotes and those personal stories that that people bring those to the table when they are having fun together. But at the same time, I was very skeptical of the fact that, okay, yay, let's make it a party, a neighborhood party. How do you then turn that into something meaningful to make policy? And she said, well, the importance of documentation and making sure that it's transparent, that it's captured. So that was for me like a great insight on how to make a very technical topic something joyful, something meaningful, but at the same time, making sure there is process and structure and documentation behind it. So I think that's one for me. What about you, Fania?
Yeah, I really appreciated that they weren't really just running straight into a new plan, saying, okay, our old plan is up, it's time for a new one, but rather really that notion of first understanding what are the inequities that the past plan or even just generally the past in the city has produced that currently impact people still today? And how do we take those learnings into creating a new plan, right? So they weren't just running straight at erasing what's happened, but rather really reflecting on it. And then, like you said, that sort of notion that it can be joyful, it can be fun. And at the same time, they weren't shying away at all from tough subjects like racial inequity and displacement and housing and climate. So I thought it was really fascinating that they were able to address those tough subjects that a lot of cities do struggle with, while also still maintaining that outlook that it can be a really positive experience for people and have some optimism and future looking. Yeah, I thought that was so fascinating.
Plus the importance of shaping those alliances with the community-based organizations, getting into the neighborhoods, having access to some community members, as we said, that would be typically left out from the conversation. I think that was also like a very smart tactic to really kind of see it as an ecosystem, not see it as, hey, we as a city are the only party kind of going out for consultation, but shaping those alliances is, I think, a very important strategy.
Absolutely. Really lifting up the leaders in the local community and people with lived experience and utilizing their leadership to really advance the plan. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Thank you for joining us on our journey towards a democratic future. Subscribe to the podcast to stay connected. Next month, we'll be back with another trailblazer. And remember, democracy is a journey. It's not just a destination. Stay curious, engaged, and active in your local democracy. Until next time.